on myself. Brain food, brain sleep, neurology health. Brain love on me. I need you to assess, diagnose, and treat. Reveal what's underneath some brain love or give me peace. Prescribe me some doc. Ooh, baby. Brain love on me. Brain love.
What is brain love to me? I think brain love has got to be the most important love ever. Loving what you do. And I think that's very important. You know, I'm a stand-up comic. I enjoy making people laugh. You know, I think when people come to see me, I give them brain love. I relax their minds and I entertain them. Even when I make love in bed, it's brain love. You have to make love to their mind, mentally. Without not getting your dick that far, just mentally make love to people's mind. Brain love could just be just how you feeling, feeling good. Because everything that feels good starts from the brain. You have to think positive. That's what brain love to me. Positive thinking of everything you do. Put your mind into everything you do. Make love to everything mentally. You know what I mean?
Okay. Hey, guys. So this is definitely unannounced. I decided to interview one of my former classmates today because April is Alcohol Awareness Month, and I wanted to talk to him about his sobriety. If you've been following the podcast, you know that I interviewed him previously. It's almost 3 years exact today. Our interview to talk about his challenges with alcohol overuse was about 3 years ago. And I wanted to do this interview here on StreamYard. Shout out to StreamYard. Shout out to Michael Blackson with the definition of brain love. Brain love is definitely thinking positively. So I decided, yeah, you know what? Hey, I'll go live and I'll see if folks want to watch it while we're on live. So that way, if anyone has any questions, they can. Obviously, it's during the workday. So, hey, you know, if you have time, if you're on lunch, tune in. My guest on the couch today, almost said tonight, but I will be running this back on the podcast audio episode. My guest is Richard Johnson, and we're talking about alcoholism. A lot of people have challenges with alcohol overuse. Some folks have other vices like cannabis, cocaine, cigarettes, cigars. So all of us have a vice of some sort, but because April is Alcohol Awareness Month, I wanted to talk specifically about alcohol overuse. A lot of children have become addicted or have begun to abuse alcohol. I want him to talk about his sobriety journey. He's been sober now for several months. Actually, we're in some years right now with him. And so I'm going to bring him up so that way we can have this chit chat, this conversation. Hey.
Hey, what's happening?
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am peachy keen. Thank you. And thanks for coming on to join me on the podcast again. No, you are there in Maryland.
I am. Mm-hmm. Baltimore.
Yeah, you're in B-more, which, yeah, that's my old stomping grounds, undergrad and all that stuff and training. So I was looking at the date of our first interview. It was April 18th, 2021. Where in your life with alcohol were you in 2021? Was that at the beginning of your sobriety?
Yes. So I took my last drink on the 15th of April in 2019, I believe. So that was probably a good, at that point, 3 years in, 2 years in at that point.
Gotcha. And so how long have you been in recovery?
5 years total. 5 years. Nice. On April the 15th was my fifth year of sobriety.
Yay.
Yeah, yay indeed.
Yes. Is it a struggle?
No, it's not. Mm-hmm. I've been to rehab three times, and the first two outings with that were definitely a struggle, but the third time I finally got it, it wasn't that difficult. You know, I was going through a lot of other stuff at the time, but it wasn't too bad. Had a couple of little issues, a couple situations, I guess, incidents that kind of made me want to relapse, but I didn't, obviously, because I'm still here. So
gotcha. Congrats on that. Praise God. You said incidents which kind of made you feel like you wanted to relapse. So these were stressful things that were going on in your life.
Yes. And I'm not a stress dude. Like, I don't get stressed out about anything, but those two specific things kind of almost pushed me over the edge. And thank God for my friends, like my man Walter really talked me off the edge with that. So I'm good now. Now, you know, I actually had to go to therapy, ironically, to learn how to deal with some of the things I was dealing with. And once I got that, once I got those ideas in my head and practiced them in real time, it really basically saved my life in a sense.
Nice. Now, are you still in therapy?
No, I haven't been in therapy in quite some time.
Okay. But it was somewhere along your journey, somewhere in your path.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And you mentioned something that's important when people are achieving sobriety and trying to maintain sobriety. Your support system is very important. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about people, places, and things. Those are the things that you stay away from. Usually the reference is about staying away from people who could tempt you, staying away from places that could tempt you, staying away from things that could tempt you. But to maintain a sobriety, people are important too. Because you want to be able to, you want to have friends and family and folks who can give you that support.
Sure, absolutely.
So, you know, I just want to revisit a little bit. You began to overuse alcohol, not because you were unhappy in a marriage, not because you hated your job, not because you were sad. Tell the people, why did you begin to abuse alcohol?
Me and my wife at the time, we took a trip to Puerto Rico. We pretty much got drunk every night. And once I came back from Puerto Rico, I just kept drinking. Just because I liked the way it made me feel, because I didn't really drink until I was 40 years old, for real. And about 40. And never been drunk, never none of that stuff. So I did that, enjoyed it, and just kept doing it just because of that.
Yeah. So, you know, people think, oh, you become an alcoholic because you have problems or you're unhappy. Alcoholics come in all shapes and sizes. You know, a lot of people who overuse alcohol are what we call functional alcoholics. They're very functional. They go to work every day. They take a shower, change their clothes, do their hair. They function. They are just abusing or overusing alcohol.
Yep.
So you've been sober now for over 5 years. You're 4 days over 5 years.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you just had your sobriety anniversary.
Yes, I did. Beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. What motivated you to seek help and to begin recovery? When did you realize, like, okay, I got to change?
I guess I realized a few years into drinking, but I just couldn't stop. And then once it got to the point of when it got to the point of me actually getting help, it was, you know, I was already 8 years in, 8 years into drinking. So, but I knew I had a problem pretty early on, but I didn't care. Just how alcohol does. That's how it did me. I'm not going to say does, but that's how it did me. Jesus Christ could have came down from heavens himself and told me to stop drinking. I still would have drank. Until I was ready. And then it still took 3 trips to rehab and a couple bad incidents. Well, even the bad stuff that happened didn't even deter me. It was literally just me going to rehab again and again and again and finally getting it.
Okay. So, yeah, you know, I encourage people all the time, like, you know, folks to say, I relapse. I can't stand myself. I can't do anything right. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, listen, it's a part of the process. Most people relapse who are trying to get clean or remain sober from some agent. Most people will relapse. So, you know, you got to show yourself some grace.
Yep. I know I relapsed many, you know, I guess I relapsed 3 times. So I went to rehab 3 times. So, yeah, I guess I went to rehab, relapsed, went to rehab, relapsed, went to rehab, and then remained sober. So I guess my relapse would be twice, I guess.
Yeah. Do you surround yourself by folks who don't drink, who are sober and do not consume alcohol, or are you able to manage being around people who are consuming?
No, it doesn't bother me now. I mean, I really don't hang out with anyone. Like my best friend, Alicia, she lives in LA. My other best friend, she lives in Virginia. And my man Walter, my man who I chill here with, who's one of my main dudes, one of my best friends as well. He drinks, but not really around me. He gets it. So, but I don't have any problems being around it anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never drank at bars. So that was never a trigger for me. Boredom was a trigger for me. So it's just I have to stay busy and creative and, you know, just keep my mind going. Now I can be bored and be okay. But when I first started, that was my trigger was the boredom thing. But to answer your question, I don't really hang around anybody but my kids and him from time to time. And then that's it. So I don't have any issues with that.
Gotcha. Yeah, boredom is a common factor for a lot of folks and why they start to abuse certain things. So I'm glad you mentioned that. What are some of the strategies or the treatments that you have used to remain sober? What are some of your own strategies?
Well, my own strategies, which I took from rehab, were, you know, my main thing is playing the tape through. I'm sure you've heard that saying many times in your profession, but playing the tape through to me is thinking back and picturing the hell that I was in for, you know, 8-9 years. And it was literally a living hell. And I don't ever want to go through that again. So I look at all the bad things that happened to me, everything I lost, what I did to my kids and my wife at the time and my parents and my friends. And I really think about that. And I am never going back down that road again.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing for me and my kids. Like I just couldn't do that to my kids again.
Gotcha. Yeah. How old were your kids when you were going through, when you were initially were abusing alcohol and it became a problem for you? How old were the kiddos?
My daughter was, she's 19 now. So she was about 9 and my son was about 6. Mm-hmm. So it didn't really get bad until they were probably, I don't know, 11 and 8.
Gotcha.
So they saw it from the beginning.
How has your life changed since you achieved sobriety and you've been in recovery? Have you noticed fruitful, positive changes?
In myself, yes, absolutely. Really just being I guess in a general sense, just more happy and more content and, you know, not, like I said, I'm not a stressed guy. I don't really get mad about things and I'm just a happier person overall. And I learn how to deal with things. And when things don't go my way, I don't automatically think about picking up going to a liquor store and grabbing a bottle or nothing. So, Everything has gotten better. And it wasn't always the case. Cause you know, when I first got out of rehab, I was living in a halfway house with, you know, 3 dudes in a room, like 10 of us in a crib. And it wasn't an ideal situation for me to be in, especially coming from where I'm from and what I had going in and living and sleeping in a room with 3 other dudes wasn't it. But I was trying to do everything that the rehab center told me to do. Because I didn't do that last time. So, but overall, my quality of life is a million times better.
So when you say you didn't do it the other time, so the other time you went to rehab, when you got out, you didn't go into a halfway house. You went home?
I went home. Yeah, I went home. And, you know, I didn't go to AA meetings or any of that stuff. But when both the first 2 times, I went to a few AA meetings, but I didn't really take it as serious as I should have. But when I got out of rehab the third time, I went to the halfway house. I did the 90 and 90, which is, you know, 90 meetings, 90 days. I did that straight through. Even when I was in the hospital post-surgery, I was going downstairs with my little IV thing, going to the AA meetings on the first floor of the hospital and shit, just so I can get my 90 and 90 in.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. So you followed the recommendations, you were compliant, you did the halfway house, you participate in AA. Mm-hmm. Do you still have a sponsor with AA?
I do. I do have a sponsor. I don't know why his name is escaping me now, but I do have a sponsor. But,
maybe because you haven't been talking to him.
No, I talk to him on Facebook every now and then, but yeah, okay. He's doing well and I had a sponsor, but I was I didn't really go over the steps, and I didn't do a lot of that stuff with him because he took kind of a different approach.
And
Dexter, that's his name, Dexter. And he kind of, you know, helped me through. He was the, I guess the I don't know how what you would call him, like the leader of the halfway house or whatever. He was the main dude there. So I saw Dexter every day. So if he, you know, if I had any issues, I just talked to him.
Do you mind if we touch just a little bit on your physical health challenges?
Sure, not at all.
And the reason why I want to bring them up is because I think it's even more extraordinary that you're balancing and you're remaining sober, considering what you're dealing with in your life with your physical health. Folks who may have heard that interview back in 2021 may recall that Rich spoke to us about his battle with cancer. Mm-hmm. And you continue, you're beating cancer. You're beating it because, you know, you're here with us, you're talking, you look good. So you're staying on top. What mm-hmm. type of cancer are you battling currently in your life?
Initially, colon cancer is the initial, was my initial diagnosis. And then it metastasized and spread to my liver and my left lung and then my right lung. So I ended up having surgery on my colon, a colon resection, I think it's called. And then I had 40% of my liver removed. And then I had some of my left lung removed. Now it's in my right lung, and that's what they're monitoring now. I literally had a CT scan yesterday to monitor my right lung. So I'm still going through it. I still go to chemo every 3 weeks. I haven't been in about a month because I've just been insanely busy. And but I'll be in chemo on Monday, back dealing with that BS. Mm-hmm. Chemo is awful. I don't wish that on anybody. But started my colon and started to spread.
Tell us why you say it's awful, because, you know, if someone's never been around someone or knew someone who had cancer, they don't know what chemo does to a person.
Or what it does to me is just nausea, so awful nausea. And now it's better, but at the beginning it was severe nausea, tingling in my fingers. I kept dropping everything. I had sores in my mouth. I had a pump, this big pump that you carry on that goes into the port on my chest, which is still there. It just keeps pumping medicine into you. So I was sick all the time, just sick for 2 weeks. And I get the pump taken out for a week. Then they put it back in for a week. And it's just the nausea and just it's just bad. Everything's bad about it. And now I only go every 3 weeks, and I'm only nauseous and sick for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Usually by Friday, I'm back to normal again. So I'm only sick about 4 or 5 days a month, and that is awful. So anybody who's going through that, like weekly, and you know how you watch TV at night and see little kids on there battling cancer, and you've been seeing it for years. We kind of just don't even pay attention to it. Now I can see them little kids are warriors, because it is rough. It's rough.
Wow. Yeah. Shout out to Marisha Phillips. She was on the podcast in March, and she shared her journey and what's been going on with her with a lung cancer. So thanks for sharing that. And so I think, you know, it just shows you're a warrior as well. And to be able to refrain from relapsing on the alcohol, because oftentimes, especially when people are going through very uncomfortable, painful situations, they will turn to something to self-medicate, whether it's drugs or alcohol or smoking cigarettes, whatever it is. You know, I've had patients who had lung cancer and would still smoke cigarettes. So, yeah.
I get it, though. I believe, I get it. I can't judge anybody. Mm-hmm. I can't do it.
So what are you doing for your self-care? How are you taking care of yourself? How are you maintaining the balance? Besides, of course, the sobriety and treating yourself kind from the alcohol, that's a little bit of self-care. But what else are you doing intentionally for your self-care?
I work out a lot. I'm still not in great shape because I still eat like a dumbass from most of the time. But I work out you know, 5 days a week, and I do the Peloton thing for 5 days a week. So that keeps me really busy. And just being creative, I shoot. So, you know, I still shoot and DJ and stuff like that. So it's the being, staying creative, just trying to learn something on YouTube, like every day within my wheelhouse, what I do with video editing and directing. And I just try to stay super, super busy. And, you know, my kids too. So, you know, my daughter, I don't see my daughter that often. And they live with me for a few years. And now my daughter's gone and my son stays with his mom during the week now. So it's just me by myself here most of the week. And I just try to stay creative and just stay positive. And that's all I do. Like, I don't get into any drama with anybody. My relationship with my ex is cool. We great. I guess to answer your question, just gym, work, and kids.
Gotcha. Gym, work, and kids. And also the music, the DJing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yep. You know, music is, for me, it's the ultimate therapy. It's one of my main go-tos for therapy.
The music every day.
Yeah. And that's what I wanted to ask you. I know you're a DJ. I know that you've been a DJ for a long time. You have those skills. Do you yourself consume music?
Yeah. Every day.
What are some of your favorite genres of music? Do you have any, or you just like everything?
No. You know, my favorite is hip hop, of course, but you know, I like pretty much from 88 to 2005 is what I rock with mostly. Like all the new stuff, some of it's good, but it's really not my cup of tea. I love R&B now though. The new R&B I do like. So I listen to a lot of new R&B. Always trying to find new R&B.
Got it. What are you calling new R&B? New R&B, what's that?
You know, what's her name?
What's her name?
I don't know, I can't think of her. I got a whole like new playlist. I'm not talking about like, I mean,
her?
Would you
consider her new R&B?
No, not now. No? A couple years ago. Okay.
What about SZA? Is she new R&B?
Newish, yeah. But I like Kali Uchis. Lucky Day, I like.
So the ones that kind of sound like the Oriental music type.
Yeah, Sheeny Asian Fogo. Vibe. I don't know if you know who Sheeny Fogo is, but she's super dope. And And Kamari's dope. Like, this real obscure people that's not super popular. Sifo from London, he's dope.
Wow, you're dropping some names I have never heard before. Do you make playlists in Spotify that you can share?
I can send it to you.
Yeah, send me a playlist or whatever. Because, you know, on Spotify, you can make a playlist and make it accessible for people to see your playlist.
I certainly will. I remember you like a Sade.
Yeah. I'm a Sade fan.
I remember I picked you up from somewhere in a purple truck when we was banging Sade.
Oh, my God. That would have been, you were 2 years ahead of me, so that would have been my senior prom.
Yeah, I took a senior prom, yep.
Yeah.
And, her name is Naomi Sharon. Have you ever heard
of her? Okay, I have heard of Naomi.
Okay, she's dead.
So playlists, or text me some names and I'll look them up on Spotify, and you know, Spotify will create a radio or playlist based on an artist name. So
yep, I most certainly will.
So one last question for you, and that would be, what advice would you give to someone who's listening or watching or will watch later, who's struggling with alcohol abuse, overuse, and they want to get sober? How would you force them or get them past that pre-contemplation stage?
Right? I would tell them first to go to AA and continue to go to AA like every day, and hopefully that will work, because that works for a lot of people, obviously. But I would start with AA. Obviously, if they're at that point, they know they have a problem. So I would say AA, and then if that doesn't work, then definitely look into rehab, because that's just going to get you one way or another. It's going to get you.
Yeah. You know, do you know Christina Phillips? She was also class of 94 with me. Okay. we had a conversation previously because she works for a program. She works for a men's program. So we were talking about that, how they encourage people to stay in the program. So folks, you know, talk to some people if you're uncertain about your recovery, if you're uncertain about how to achieve recovery or initiate recovery, get into recovery from alcohol abuse, overuse, or any other substance. You can get past that pre-contemplation, past contemplation stage, and initiate the process. The first thing Rich mentioned, go to AA. You can go to Narcotics Anonymous as well. Mm-hmm. So there's AA, NA if your situation is narcs or substances, cocaine, any of that. But if there's not a Narcotics Anonymous and you're not an alcoholic, you still can go to Alcoholics Anonymous. AA is not just for people who use recreational drugs, right?
Nope. I've been at NA meetings, AA meetings, all of them.
Mm-hmm. So, and there's so much online now.
Yeah.
You know, you can Google, you can just put in some information and a lot of things will come up for you. A lot of things will, you can put in alcoholic, need help, alcohol abuse, need help. You can do any of those things and you'll be able to get information on sites you can go to. You can also go to the site for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to show you a phone number you can call, 1-800-662-HELP, 1-800-662-4357. Call this number. They can give you a list of references. They can email you a list of references. They can give you information. Just get started. Just get started. You don't have to continue living this life of torture, because I think for some people that's what it feels like. It's like Groundhog's Day every day.
No, it don't feel like it. Is that it's hell. Groundhog Day in hell.
Yeah, you wake up drinking and you drink all day to keep yourself comfortable.
Yep.
And doing that is just going to make the problem worse.
Yep. Like I said, it's gonna get you one way or another.
Yeah. Well, Rich, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Yeah. When I saw 5 years on Facebook, I was like, oh, yay. So he's 5 years sober. Yeah,
appreciate
it. And yeah, I always think about the interview we did 3 years ago. So yeah, that's what's up. Any last departing words?
No. I appreciate you having me on. And again, that number right down there on that screen, just if you have any issues, just call it or know someone, tell them to call it, because mm-hmm. You don't want to get caught up in this cycle, in that cycle, because it's awful.
Yeah, no. All right, say brain love, all right. Rich.
You too. Thank you.
No. I said say brain love.
Oh, I thought you said peace. Oh, brain love. Brain love all day.